Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.podomatic.com. Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another episode of Luke's English Podcast. In this one, I'm joined once again by my cousin Ollie. Hello, Ollie.
Hello.
And we're actually sitting in Ollie's living room in his house in South London. Thanks for cooking me some spaghetti bolognese for dinner.
You're welcome. It was very nice, wasn't it?
It was. It was very good. I must ask you what your recipe is about that later on. I have actually talked about cooking spaghetti on the podcast before, and there is some debate over when pasta is ready. What's your position on that?
Well, I tend to taste it, and if it's slightly al dente, so it's very slightly chewy, then that's good. But if it's actually spaghetti rather than, you know, penne,
yeah,
then you're supposed to throw it at the ceiling, aren't you? And if it sticks, then it's ready.
Well, this is where the debate has started, and I've had various bits of information from different people which contradicts itself. Some people say that if you throw the spaghetti at the wall and it sticks, that it's overcooked.
Ah, but not all of the spaghetti.
Not the whole piece. No, not obviously not the entire pan full of... You shouldn't throw all of your spaghetti at the wall.
No, that would be a problem.
Yeah, because then... Well,
it's a hygiene risk, really.
It's hygiene.
It?
You would end up wasting all of your spaghetti that way. You throw the spaghetti at the ceiling.
Yeah, and then if it sticks to the ceiling, because gravity on, you know, which gives it more of a kind of...
Challenge.
Yeah.
But surely if it sticks to the ceiling, then it's too cooked, isn't it?
No, it's just... Apparently that's just right, but I mean, I don't do that.
No.
I just taste it.
You just taste it with your mouth.
Yeah, with my mouth, yeah.
There's no need to...
I don't taste it with the ceiling.
No. It's quite interesting, the idea of throwing your food at some object or some part of your house in order to check whether it's ready. I mean, you only would do that with spaghetti.
Yeah,
you
wouldn't, toast. I don't do that with toast.
You wouldn't do that with toast.
No.
So you wouldn't sort of like, is the toast ready? Let's see. Let's sort of throw it into the corner of the room to see if the toast is cooked.
Exactly. I don't throw soup at the wall when I've had it.
No. It's not, for example, your way of checking whether an apple is ripe. You wouldn't kind of, I don't know, sort of throw it out the window and see how it bounces on the floor.
It bounces back up to the first floor. No.
That would be ridiculous, of course. But anyway, you did cook me some spaghetti bolognese, and I don't know, it doesn't really matter to me how you checked whether the spaghetti was ready. The main thing was that it was very tasty, and I hope that it was hygienic.
It was hygienic.
I think it was clean. And so, you know, it was tasty, it was clean, it was properly cooked, it was properly prepared. And so it's all good. It's all good in the hood, as they might say, if they lived in a hood, a neighbourhood. So the idea behind this episode, we've got some music playing in the background, but we're not going to talk about that.
No.
The main point of this episode is the idea of the versus battle, or the VS battle, right? Now, this concept is it's not new. Any kind of match or sort of competition would involve the versus element. For example, a football match, you know, Liverpool versus Everton, or, you know, those movies like Alien versus Predator, or a boxing match, Muhammad Ali versus Joe Frazier, for example. Or also these kind of internet debates, things like, you know, who would win in a fight between a bear and a shark, so like a bear versus a shark, or the ninja versus pirates debate, which has gone around the internet many times. So what we've done is we've created a number of different versus battles, and we have written them down on pieces of paper, and I've put them in a hat. It's actually a fez. You've got one of these Moroccan style fez hats in your house.
Yeah. Do you know where that's from, actually?
Morocco?
No, yeah, it is from Morocco, but you and I, on our 30th birthday, had a hedonism party, and that was one of the things worn at that party.
The hedonism party was a kind of... it was our joint 30th birthday, because we're about 3 weeks... Oliver is 3 weeks older than me, so we were 30, around the same time. And we had this party called a hedonism party. Hedonism actually refers to... Well, it's like the idea of sort of...
some decadence.
Decadence, like indulging in things like drinking, for example, would be a very hedonistic thing. But there's a joke, because hedonism, like head, H-E-A-D, so the theme of this hedonism party was that you had to wear something on your head.
It's like fancy dress, but just for the head.
Yeah, so it would involve wearing a hat on your head, or maybe a pair of glasses, or some kind of...
A mask or
something like that. So everyone had to come with some item of fancy dress on their head or face. And one of the items that people could wear was this fez, this Moroccan-style fez.
Yeah, I thought you wore that fez, but... Yeah.
Anyway...
Obviously wore it home at the end of the night.
Now you've got this fez in your living room, and we're using the fez to contain all of these little pieces of paper which contain different types of versus battle. Some of them are quite intellectual, some of them are quite sort of banal and trivial, and so shall we get started?
Yeah, what have you got? Pick one.
By the way, there's no... We're not looking necessarily for a winner in these battles. We're more just exploring the whole competition between the two things. So the first one I've got here is Star Wars versus Lord of the Rings.
Oh, I see, yeah.
Now, just to explain, of course, you should know Star Wars. Luke Skywalker, Darth Vader. Yeah. I am, to the dark side, all that kind of thing. Lord of the Rings, as we know, Hobbit, Gandalf,
Aragorn, elves, dwarves, all of that.
Smeagol,
Gollum,
yeah, that kind of thing. So, basically, what do you think? Star Wars versus Lord of the Rings?
Well, I think difficult. Lord of the Rings is pretty medieval. You know, Star Wars would... There's no lightsabers in Lord of the Rings. But would an elf take on a Jedi?
An elf versus a Jedi,
yeah.
You think? I think it's more like Gandalf versus maybe Yoda.
Oh, yeah.
Gandalf versus Yoda. Who would win in that battle, do you think?
I think... Oh, that's tricky. I think probably Gandalf.
Because he's taller than Yoda?
Height is a factor. But, you know, he has magic, whereas Yoda sort of has the Force and he can do... He's sort of quite close combat, Yoda, whereas Gandalf could summon the powers of kind of nature against him.
For me, Gandalf's strength really was his ability to persuade people. He was more of a diplomat than obviously in the movies at the end you see that he's a warrior as well, but in the books especially, he's really a diplomat, and he manages to persuade people. That's his real power, is in being persuasive.
Well, he's the power of knowledge, doesn't he, and lore.
Yeah. Yeah, whereas Yoda, well, it's similar, because he also is a bit of a pacifist in the first movies. He doesn't really fight. In the more recent ones, which I didn't really like, he does fight, and I think that's ridiculous, really.
It did look a bit absurd, yeah.
I don't think they would fight. I think that Gandalf and Yoda would be mates. They'd be friends, wouldn't they?
I think they probably would. They would...
They'd smoke pipe together or something.
Yeah.
And maybe Gandalf would help Yoda with his sentence structure.
Yeah, he would tutor him in sort of grammar.
But in terms of the, I don't think that we can really agree on one of them being better, Star Wars versus Lord of the Rings.
You were just talking about the movies, for example.
I have to say Star Wars.
But you're a Star Wars obsessive, whereas I would say Star Wars as well. It sort of defined a new genre.
Yeah.
Whereas Lord of the Rings was quite classic, epic movie.
Yeah.
You know, didn't really break boundaries too much in that sense.
I liked Lord of the Rings, but there were also some things that I found deeply annoying about it.
Yeah.
Certain things that they changed. Obviously, Lord of the Rings was already a book, and I think that the movies weren't as good as the book.
As a slight aside, was your dad not tutored by Tolkien at university?
My dad was tutored by Christopher Tolkien, who was J.R.R. Tolkien's son.
I thought J.R.R. Tolkien tutored your dad.
Apparently, Christopher Tolkien was a bit boring.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Well, obviously less boring than J.R.R. Tolkien, because... Tolkien, told these awesome stories about elves and dragons and stuff.
Yeah, epic tales.
But Christopher Tolkien was a bit more...
Just an English teacher.
Just a bit, yeah, slightly less exciting somehow. So personally, I prefer Star Wars because it was a movie which I watched from childhood and something that always excited me and inspired me. And, you know, I always thought it was perfect. It was a obviously, now, when I look back at it as an adult, I can see that as a film, it's not perfect at all.
Yeah.
You know, some of the acting and some of the script...
Certainly Mark Hamill, as an actor, was pretty... sort of deficient.
Pretty pedestrian, really.
Yeah.
But still, for me, in my mind, the movie Star Wars is something that I can watch, and it takes me back to my childhood. It's like an innocent, kind of pure thing. Whereas Lord of the Rings, now, I look at it and I think, well, it's not as good as the book. I don't like the way they changed some of the things in it.
And also, I think sci-fi has a bit more appeal than fantasy.
You think so?
Yeah, I think so. It's more... you can relate to it more. It's like... It's a feasible-ish future rather than a completely fantasy world.
Yeah, okay. We could talk about that forever, and I think we'll find that we can talk about most of these forever.
Yeah, okay.
But
so
we have to move on. We shouldn't spend more than a few minutes discussing each topic, so let's try and squeeze as much sort of nonsense into each topic as we can. And I want to finish everything in this hat, and if you can hear, podcasters... hear all that paper in there? That's a lot of nonsense that has to be talked about. So
skip through some of these.
Okay, so Ollie, what's the next thing?
Okay, the next one is early birds versus night owls.
Early birds versus night owls. And what does that mean?
So early birds versus night owls. That means early birds are people who are basically kind of morning people. So they're on their best form first thing in the morning when they wake up. So they're the people who kind of skip to breakfast with a smile on their faces.
They're like, oh, I can't wait to get out of bed. It's 7 o'clock.
They're sort of people who say if you have a lion that you're wasting the best part of the day.
Right. So these are people who love getting up early in the morning. They love. They think the morning is the best part of the day.
Exactly.
Exactly. They don't have lie-ins. They just love to get out of bed and do things. I think these are very annoying people.
I can't stand these people.
Yeah. All right, and then night owls.
Night owls are people, famously Winston Churchill was a night owl. People who are at their best in the early hours of the morning. So they stay up late, they kind of hit their form, they do most of their best work late at night. And they don't like going to bed, but they inevitably stay in bed quite late as well.
So they kind of get up at lunchtime and go to bed in the middle of the night.
So owl is a nocturnal animal, so that's why they're night owls.
The owl, of course, is that bird that kind of comes out at night, the one that...
Yeah,
kind of makes that kind of noise.
It can rotate its head.
All the way around.
All the way around.
I can rotate my head all the way around.
360 degrees, though.
Yeah, I could do that, too.
Can you?
Things, though,
I
also have to rotate my body 360 degrees,
that's true. Yeah.
Too. So what do you think? I think we've already dealt with that. We prefer night owls, I imagine.
Yeah, night owls are generally wiser. They're probably more fun, slightly edgy. They're the ones who are going to be getting drunk and being hedonistic and slightly crazy.
Yes.
And early birds are a bit more conventional and sort of annoying. No one wants someone in a good mood at breakfast.
Can you imagine imagine that going on holiday with an early bird, and they would be like, right, come on, it's 6 o'clock in the morning, let's go for a walk. And he'd be like, just leave me alone.
Yeah, I was out till 3.
Yeah, we were up drinking wine until 4 a.m. I don't want to go for a walk, I've only had 2 hours sleep.
Yeah, how much fun is a walk versus drinking wine?
Why would I need to go for a walk? What are we doing? Are we going to buy more wine? You know, no thanks, I'll stay in bed. So I think the night owl won.
The night owl wins that, yeah.
Okay, so the next thing from the hat is the... This is a bit deep, this one. Okay. Metaphor versus simile.
Okay.
Metaphor versus simile. Now, what's your... What is a metaphor and what is a simile? First,
see, this is your expert area. Simile is when one thing is like another thing.
So I think we should point out these are both, let's say, devices for writers or devices in English.
They're sort of ways of explaining things.
Ways of expressing ideas or describing things.
So metaphor is something that is the same as something else, and a simile is when one thing is like another thing.
I think metaphor isn't when it's the same as something else. It's when you describe one thing by using another kind of imagery. So, for example, if you say this in poetry, if you say the sun was an orange, yeah, that's a metaphor, because obviously the sun isn't an orange, but you're saying that the sun was an orange, meaning that it was large, it was round, and it was orange,
yeah,
in colour.
Yeah, there's two things that are, yeah, it's that sort of.
So you're saying that you're describing one thing by saying that it's another thing.
Yeah,
that's a metaphor. Whereas a simile is basically just when you use the word like.
Yeah. They're showing kind of parallels between two things.
Yeah, you're comparing.
Rather than saying that they're the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. So that would be like, simile would be, the sun was like a big orange in the sky.
Yeah.
Can we think of some other examples of metaphor?
Using the sun.
So let's say, not with the sun, let's say, for example, if you had a fight with a man in the pub, if you described this man using metaphors, you'd say, and this gorilla walked across the room to punch me in the face.
Yeah, this great ogre.
Yeah, exactly. But obviously it wasn't a gorilla, it was just a man who was large and sort of probably a bit stupid, who wanted to smash you in the face.
Yeah.
But with a simile, it would be like, and then this horrible man who looked like a gorilla,
yeah,
walked across the bar.
He punched me like a cannon. His punch was like a cannonball.
His punch was like a cannonball. Or it would be like when he punched. His punch was like a cannonball is a simile. And suddenly a cannonball hit me in the face. It means that he actually punched you in the face, but you're sort of trying to make it more expressive by saying that a cannonball hit you. Which one is better?
A metaphor is better.
Metaphors are better than similes.
Yeah, they have more scope and they're more kind of lateral.
Yeah, a bit more allegorical sometimes.
Yeah,
because you can use, for example, I don't know, you could tell one story and it could mean you could.
That is actually an allegory rather than a metaphor. An allegory is kind of an extended metaphor, I guess.
Yeah.
So you know, Animal Farm is an allegory for communism.
Yeah.
Or the kind of Russian history, at least. Russian Revolution.
Yeah. All right, metaphors versus similes. There you go. We seem to prefer metaphors if we think they're more powerful. Right, there you go. What's
my
next?
Turn. Let's pick one of these out. So, Connery versus Moore.
Connery versus Moore. These are James Bond actors. I think this is, so far, maybe one of the most important subjects that we could discuss, or that we have discussed so far. Which one's better, Sean Connery or Roger Moore? Which is the best James Bond?
See, this is easy, but I'm not going for the subtle kind of comparisons of their acting styles or you know, how the treatment of James Bond changed when they were acting, each one.
Yeah.
For me, it's quite simply down to athletic ability, right? So Sean Connery was a professional footballer before becoming Bond. I think he was a semi-pro, yeah.
Yeah, he was a bodybuilder as well, I believe.
He was certainly a semi-pro footballer.
Was he Mr. Universe?
No, you're thinking of Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
But Connery was like genuinely a good athlete, whereas Roger Moore, I remember specifically watching him running down a beach, I think in is it Live and Let Die? No, which one would it be?
Or maybe Octopussy.
Yeah, probably Octopussy. And he's just, he's very flat-footed. He certainly couldn't fight, he couldn't run, he couldn't do any of the stunts that he's proposed, you know. It was a real chink in his armour.
What he could do, though, is look damn good in a suit.
Yes.
I don't really care about his athletic ability. As long as he looks good in a pinstripe suit and he can raise his eyebrow and order a martini, shaken, not stirred.
Yeah.
You know, that for me
is.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. I'm not being very subtle about it, but it's quite simply between those two actors.
Yeah.
Not just about Bond, but, you know, I can't stand people who can't run properly. And he's
really?
No, I can't.
You can't stand people who can't run properly?
No, it really annoys me, especially in movies when they're supposed to be kind of, you know, good fighters or something. It just sort of really,
oh, okay, right.
It's a real moment where any credibility just fell away.
Right, when basically the whole movie is built upon the idea that this guy is a fighter and he's a dangerous man.
Yeah.
But when you actually see him running, you realise, oh my God, he's
retarded.
He's terrible.
Yeah.
He can't even run properly. I don't believe any of this anymore.
Yeah.
Well, maybe that takes something away. I think most people would say that Sean Connery is the best.
Yeah, he's just cooler, isn't he?
Yeah, I mean, he was like, he seemed to be a bit more brutal. Yeah. You know, he had that brutal thing that, James, but he seemed a bit more cruel and brutal.
A bit more thuggish.
A bit more of a thug. And at the same time, he was perhaps more dangerous and dangerously attractive to women.
Yeah.
A bit more serious, handsome and all that sort of thing. Roger Moore was, I found, a bit more of a comical kind of
exactly.
James Bond.
He was much more tongue-in-cheek.
Yes.
You know, more satirical kind of...
Yeah. I really enjoy watching Roger Moore James Bonds now, but I feel that they're more ironic and tongue-in-cheek
yeah.
than the Sean Connery ones, which are genuinely more dramatic movies.
Yeah, they're more thrilling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I love... do you want to know how to do a Sean Connery accent?
Yes.
Do you know how to do it?
I can do it a little bit, but not very well.
The basic element... There are, as far as I'm concerned, there are just two basic elements
yeah.
to it. The first one, of course, being the S... The S sound,
yeah.
which should be pronounced sh.
Yesh.
So yesh, exactly. The second one is just that you kind of lower your voice. Yesh. So the name's Bond, James Bond, 007.
Yeah.
And then say kind of cool things like, I've smelt that cologne twice before. And both times I smelt a rat. But what about Roger Moore?
Roger Moore.
Roger Moore.
Much more up and down.
It's kind of camp, a little bit camp.
Yeah.
So, Roger Moore. So, you know, it'd be like, do you prefer speed or stamina, Mr. Bond? Well, a little bit of both, I would have thought. You know? Like, yeah. basically, everything he says has got some sexual innuendo to it.
Yeah, yeah. He's very much an innuendo Bond, that's right.
Yeah. It's like, we're assigning you with an American special agent this time, Bond. Here she is. She's called Pussy Galore. And then Bond would go, a woman. You know?
Yeah. That Pussy Galore.
Pussy Galore.
I must be dreaming. That's actually a Connery line.
I must be dreaming. That's yeah. John Connery.
Yeah,
is it?
Yeah.
Okay. So Roger Moore.
Yeah, it's Connery all the way, isn't it?
He's definitely the best.
Plus, Connery obviously had a much more successful acting career after Bond than Moore did.
Yeah.
Much more versatile actor.
Yeah.
Despite only ever having exactly the same accent.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, Sean Connery, whatever role he played, he sort of, every single role he played it like this. Even when he was speaking Japanese.
Yeah, he quite specifically chose roles that required a different accent and then refused to do it.
Yeah, I think there's a film called Rising Sun
yeah.
with Sean Connery and Denzel Washington. No, who else is it? Who's Blade? Wesley Snipes.
Wesley Snipes, yeah.
It's Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes, and they're in Japan, and Sean Connery speaks Japanese.
Yeah,
and so listening to Sean Connery speaking Japanese is hilarious, because he goes, Arigato gozaimasu, you know? brilliant.
Yeah.
Okay, so it's your turn, I think. So
I got that one.
You got the last one, did you?
Yes.
Next, there you go, there's the hat. One.
There's a lot in here, you know.
I know, there's loads of things in here.
Oh, Apple versus Microsoft.
Apple versus Microsoft. Okay, well, you're an Apple user. You've got, like, Apple iPhone and MacBook. I've got a MacBook as well.
I've been to visit Apple in Cupertino.
You've been to the Apple offices in America,
I was invited over, yeah.
Really? Okay.
So, see, this is interesting because just last week, Apple became the most valuable company, I think maybe just technology company, of all time.
The most valuable technology company of all time.
I think it might be the most valuable company of all time, because Microsoft was the most valuable company,
mm-hmm.
valued at $584 billion. And Apple was just recently valued at $600 billion.
Yeah.
But if you take into account, you know, inflation and such like, then Microsoft was still kind of more valuable. But Apple has sort of just, it feels like it's tipped the balance and become so dominant
yeah.
that it's now no longer kind of cool and the underdog. It's sort of become the establishment.
I think that we've reached the tipping point with
yeah.
Apple.
Saturation.
And now it's no longer cool to have Apple stuff, I think. Although, you know, obviously Apple products are all still brilliant. But if you look at, for example, the iPhone versus, let's say, the Samsung Galaxy S, what is it, the Samsung Galaxy G2 or S2 or something, and in terms of how good they both are, a lot of people are saying that the Samsung Galaxy is better than the iPhone now. And so it's like before, a couple of years ago, it was definitely the iPhone.
Yeah.
The iPhone was just clearly better than other handsets. But now it looks like everyone is starting to catch up.
But this is Apple versus Microsoft.
This is Apple versus Microsoft.
So Apple is still cooler than Microsoft ever was.
And still better.
And still better.
Although Windows 7 is better than all the other Windows we've had
but
so
apparently
far.
Windows 8 is amazing.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I just read a technology report where it said Windows 8 is kind of as cool as the Apple OS.
Yeah.
Whatever it is, Lion.
I think that what's happened is that with Windows 7, Microsoft kind of went, oh my God, look at Apple OS 10.
Yeah.
This is amazing. We've really got to fix Windows.
They stole everything.
They just stole all the ideas from Apple and applied it to Microsoft. But I don't care. I don't care if Microsoft steal ideas from Apple. As long as if they're offering me the same quality but for a cheaper price, great, yeah.
But Apple make hardware, you know? Microsoft never made the actual hardware itself. And there's like a kind of symbiotic relationship between the software and the hardware, which makes the Apple products just work.
Yeah.
You know, Microsoft's never had that. Like a Dell computer with a Windows running on it, it's not the same.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So Microsoft loses.
Yeah, still Apple as the winners. Okay, yeah. Next I've got Al Pacino versus Robert De Niro.
Oh, that's tricky.
And now we should establish why these two are together, because obviously they're both like the Italian Americans. They've both been in some fantastic films during the 70s and 80s and 90s. They both are considered to be method actors, which means that they live the role that they are performing.
Yeah, as well.
Yeah.
He's incredibly sort of similar in every role for somebody who tries to live it.
Well, I know, this is the ironic thing, that they're considered to be method actors, which means they become the role that they play. But they're always doing the same exact thing.
De Niro's a bit more versatile.
A little bit, but essentially it's just him sort of looking one way, looking, you know, making eye contact, not making eye contact, kind of going, pointing, kind of going, you, breathing through his nose, you... You, me, you, you, me, me, you, 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 me.
But what about Pacino?
Pacino just does that. Oh, oh, hoo-ha! You know, and that is pretty much whatever role he plays. If he's like Pacino is a teacher in a language school. Oh, okay, present perfect. You know, whereas De Niro as a teacher in a language school would be like you, me, we're gonna learn present. You shut up. You shut up. You know. So anyway, which one's the best in your opinion?
Well, if you look at the films they've been in, how good those movies are, and how varied, and I'd have to go with De Niro.
Yeah.
Yeah, I would. I mean, from things like what's the film before before Godfather?
The film before
Godfather?
The film
with Harvey Keitel, where he plays like a
sharp Mean Streets, eh?
Mean Streets, exactly.
Wow, come on, what's the matter with you? Come on!
So he's so different in that to Godfather.
Yeah.
He's like a wise guy, kind of wisecracking, bit of an idiot.
Yeah.
He did that, he did so many classic movies, and then things like Heat, where they're both in Heat, he wins just in that movie.
He's better than Pacino in Heat.
It's the only movie they're in together, right?
No, they're in another film together.
Oh, more recently.
It's, I can't remember the name of the recent film that they're in together, but
is it called You?
You, me, you. You, oh, you, me, very good, hoo-ha. It was a terrible film, though, the more recent one, but Heat is brilliant. I agree, I think De Niro is better. I like the you.
Yeah, he's meaner.
You know, I prefer that than, you know?
I think, he did Meet the Fockers and all that crap, but yeah, I still think he's better.
Yeah, okay. One of my favourite films ever is Taxi Driver.
Yeah, there you go.
And I think that's brilliant. But then again, Pacino did Scarface, and that is really a fantastic film.
That is a great film. And he also did...
Say Hello to My Little Friend! You know...
what's the other classic he did that was just after Scarface? I've got it.
He did another film after Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, Yeah, and of course, maybe his most famous one is the Godfather trilogy.
But De Niro was in that too.
De Niro was in the second one, but Pacino really was in all three films, and he was absolutely amazing in those.
That's true.
Okay, next one I've got in the hat is John Lennon versus Paul McCartney.
Oh, that's very, very difficult. The thing is, if you want a quick answer, I can't give you a quick answer because we're both big Beatles fans.
Yeah.
I don't know if your listeners know that, aren't we?
Yeah.
But John Lennon was obviously just sort of cooler. And,
yes.
And he was more kind of cultural, and he was more
political.
More political.
Outspoken.
Yeah, more rebellious.
Intellectual.
Yeah.
But was he... Did he... Are his songs as good as Paul McCartney's songs?
Okay, we're talking about this. So as individuals, I think Lennon is got a more kind of philosophical edge.
Yeah.
And he's more of a kind of cultural icon.
And he seemed to have more pain than Paul.
Yeah, he had more anguish and more...
And
that's right.
He as a result of his pain and his sense of humanity, there was more soul, or he was more accessible and sort of truthful about the human condition.
Yeah, he was
more of an artist in that sense. But
yeah.
What about Paul?
Well, Paul McCartney was John Lennon was an artist. I would think of Paul McCartney more as a musician, you know, as a songwriter, and he wrote beautiful, beautiful, perfect songs.
Yes.
And he was the one, I think, that made the Beatles' music what it was.
Yeah.
So in terms of their musical importance, I would say Paul McCartney.
Yeah.
In terms of their cultural significance, I would say John Lennon.
Okay.
But that's partly because John Lennon got shot.
Yeah. If John Lennon hadn't been shot, then maybe everyone would be like, oh, God, John Lennon, what a boring... Oh, yeah, Imagine, blah, blah, whatever.
Remember that, you know, what was that collaboration with Tinchy Strider all about?
Yeah.
You know, you just don't know what
he's
gonna
do. May have... In the 80s, he could have done some really terrible work.
Yeah, he could have done, yeah.
Which would have made people think that he was... rubbish.
Yeah, or he could have, he could have been found to be a wife beater. Well, anything could have happened that could have just ruined him.
Yeah.
Michael Jackson for that kind of in that way.
Yeah.
Early work still brilliant musically, but as a kind of cultural icon, as he's kind of become more of a joke.
It was really tainted by the allegations.
Yeah, that's right. So John Lennon kind of got cut off. He quit while he was ahead.
I guess so.
Not deliberately.
Yeah.
All right. No.
Paul McCartney in terms of his musical brilliance, John Lennon in terms of his political and humanitarian, and also his kind of his interesting tragic life that he had as well.
Yeah, that's right.
Fascinating as a story. But we can't really choose a winner between the two. All right, do you want to pick something else from the hat?
Okay.
I think the thing with John Lennon and Paul McCartney is they were best when they were working together.
Yeah, exactly. They were greater than the sum of their parts.
They were. Yeah, I don't really want to talk about their parts, though.
Really. Not the sum of them. This is a slightly difficult one, which is innovation versus imitation.
All right, I could probably just deal with this fairly quickly. Like, innovation, okay, obviously, is about coming up with new ideas, usually in things like technology. But it could be in other things, like in ways of thinking or ways of seeing the world.
Yeah.
But normally when we're talking about innovation, we talk about technology. And you might, for example, think about the iPod. And the innovation there was the only real innovation in the iPod was the tracking wheel, which was just the interface that you used to access the music, right?
True, but you could describe that as the simplicity of design.
Yeah, it was a very beautiful piece of design, that wheel that you dragged your finger around. And then, of course, it became the touch screen, but
the
menu
system and all of that. It was the navigation. It was good.
It was simplicity of design. But I don't know if there were any genuine innovations, like things that had never been done before.
No.
In that. So innovation is all about doing...
Is all innovation actually imitation or some kind of iteration?
I don't know what you're talking about. but imitation would be... Okay. Innovation would be like creating the wheel. Right? Before, in the Stone Age, before they had the wheel, they would, like, I don't know what they were doing.
They would use logs and roll stuff on logs and that kind of thing.
I guess so. And then eventually one caveman was like, and he kind of discovered the wheel and then made a car and...
It was the axle, surely. That was the most...
Well, the wheel was first, and the next innovation would have been some kind of dividing...
Round tray that they were carrying the food around on, and then the guy who created the axle, that was probably the innovation.
I guess so. There were probably a number of innovations at work before the wheel could really be really effectively used. You know, it would have to be, obviously, combined with things like a windmill... or something, or something like that. So that's innovation, but coming up with something new. But then,
so the Samsung Galaxy, which you talked about,
yeah,
that's an imitation of an iPhone.
Is it?
But it's a big. It looks very similar. It's a big touchscreen interface. It's got little icons that are like.
Yeah, buttons. But I don't think the iPhone was the first device to be handheld with a big screen. Because before the iPhone, there were palm tops that you used to pen.
They didn't have the same kind of app sort of button design and that interface and
the kind of lines of things. But you know, if Apple had really innovated those that design, it would have been registered as a design, design, not a patent, but a registered design.
I think they did patent the same, the patent the iPhone and so many different things about it. I think the menu system and the interface and the touchscreen. I think all of
really?
It. Yeah, I think
yeah.
That's kind
of okay. All right. I don't know. I don't know if the iPhone really was the first to arrange icons like that and to have a touchscreen. I don't know if it really was the first.
I think
this may be the power of the marketing machine of Apple.
I've also read the Steve Jobs
biography. Yeah, well, of course, you've read the Apple account of history.
No, it's not. It is independent.
That's what Apple have written into history.
No, it's not. Genuinely, it's quite an interesting read, actually.
Okay,
right. But anyway, it's not really either or, is it?
Innovation, no, I think it's a combination. Again, I'd like to have both. I think innovation is important, but also imitation, sharing ideas between different people and things, I think it's really important. So I'll have both, please. And can I have a portion of fries with that?
Yes.
Right, so talking of portions of fries, the next item here
is
Coke versus Pepsi. And I think we can agree it's Coke, isn't
it? It's Coke, next.
Right, next. So next one is a bit more difficult, and that's the Rolling Stones versus the Beatles.
I think that's quite easy as well, actually.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure?
Yeah, I am, yeah.
So
who came first?
Well, the Beatles came first.
And who's... which musically is better? Who, more number one.
Wait a minute. Who came first, the Beatles? Who lasted much longer, the Rolling Stones?
Whose credibility lasted longer?
I think they're still credible, the Rolling Stones.
Really?
Yeah.
I think creatively they're not. They're 60 strutting around on stage in tight trousers and stuff. They're just not.
Okay.
You ask a kind of 18-year-old now, Rolling Stones or the Beatles, surely?
I think a lot of people would still vote Rolling Stones because they think that the Rolling Stones occupy a whole area that the Beatles don't occupy.
That's kind of
living on the road, kind of freewheeling, rock and roll, kind of American lifestyle, which is like just freedom and the blues and real authentic rock and roll and everything.
Which is ironic because they're, you know, sort of the yacht club and that sort of thing.
Yeah.
And they're public school boys.
Well, hold on, they're not public school boys.
They were grammar school kids, though, weren't they? I think they were, actually.
No, they weren't. It wasn't public school, no.
I think they went to Eton. I heard that.
No. No, stop.
I thought Mick Jagger was actually this part of the royal family.
He was heir to the throne, but he abstained in order to form a rock and roll band.
That's right.
If he hadn't joined the Rolling Stones there, he would be king right now.
He would certainly be heir to the throne, yeah.
Yeah.
Prince of Wales.
I think he would be heir to the Senna, but that was a joke that failed. I don't know what that meant. No, obviously they didn't go to public school. They went normal school.
We need to decide on this. So,
If you could choose, if you had to burn all the records of one of those bands and only listen to the records of the other band, what would you do?
Well, for me, clearly it would be the Beatles.
You'd keep the Beatles.
But also, if you burn one of those two bands, kind of whole catalogue, if you eradicated them from history,
yeah.
Which one's influence would be more missed?
In the whole history of music?
Everything that followed them.
Oh, I think probably the Beatles, because the Rolling Stones were brilliant and influential, but really they were just kind of replicating sort of authentic rock and roll or blues music that had already happened.
Yeah.
And they were very good at it, but they were basically just, in a sense, they were just...
The Beatles innovated and the Rolling Stones imitated.
Okay, I'm sure that there are Rolling Stones fans out there who would disagree with us, but I agree.
But broadly.
I love the Rolling Stones, I just love the musicianship, because the Beatles were great at crafting songs, but I can listen to the Rolling Stones and listen to the way Charlie Watts played the drums,
yeah,
and the way that Bill Wyman played bass and Keith played the guitar, and I just really love the musicianship.
It feels more spontaneous.
Yeah, whereas with the, you know, like the Rolling Stones could have gone on like long instrumental jams. There was more of jazz in their music, but
yeah,
the Beatles were just really good at crafting these pieces of incredible songwriting.
Yeah, that's true. And recording as well. They were great recordings.
Really good in the studio. So,
can I take a short
yes,
break?
I think we'll take a short break. That is actually the end of part one of the conversation. To listen to the rest of the conversation, listen to part two. Thanks for listening to this episode of Luke's English Podcast. Don't forget to visit teacherluke.podomatic.com for more information.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.